Universal Broadcasting Company presents... Eyes Aloft!
Army Flash. One. Single motor. Very low. Scene. 6 Kenneth 3. Overhead. West.
Eyes aloft. Watching the sky. Watching for planes flying the lanes up above. Eyes aloft.
Eyes aloft. The 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces, in cooperation with West Coast radio stations, dedicates this official weekly radio program to the 150,000 volunteer civilian filter center workers and ground observers whose round-the-clock vigilance keeps watchful guard of the Pacific Coast against attack by enemy planes.
Eyes aloft, night and day, will help protect the USA.
This is Ken Carpenter speaking. Tonight, the 25th gala performance of Eyes Aloft. You'll hear Filter Center News, edited and presented by the famous newscaster Sam Hayes. This week's winners of the Why Do I Come Here contest, the presentation of the Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award, and another great American story. There'll be special music by the Gordon Jenkins Orchestra and the King's Men. And we have some very good news about your Eyes Aloft theme song. At this moment, we turn the watch over to your narrator, Gayne Whitman.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is news that will interest Aircraft Warning Service volunteers. Word has just been received from the West Coast office of Shapiro Bernstein and Company, New York music publishers, that Eyes Aloft, the official theme song of the 4th Fighter Command, has reached the counters of most of the music shops and 10-cent stores this week. In a few minutes, Ken Carpenter will give you full particulars about how to get a published copy of our theme music, Eyes Aloft. Now we present the 100-word entry that won this week's popular Why Do I Come Here contest. A weekly prize, a Treasury Department War Savings Stamp Book with $5 worth of war stamps goes to the winner. Also, his or her observation post or filter center receives a handsome desk clock as a prize. Gordon Jenkins composes an original musical score to background the dramatization of each winning entry. This week's winning entry is unusual as it was written by a 14-year-old girl observer. Why Do I Come Here? Why do I come here?
This week's winner, Miss Betty Lou Ramsey, box number 686, Barstow, California. And this is 14-year-old Betty Lou Ramsey's winning entry.
Why do I come here? Why do I come here to a lonely desert hilltop to share my vigilance with God alone? Why do I keep company with the sentinels of the past? I'll tell you why. Because I'm an American. I'm free to live, to worship, and to talk as I please. I'm not forced to serve my country at this post because I am free. Yes, I'm an American. I come up here because of those three words. I'm an American. I come up here to serve the country that gives me everything. While I give a few hours of my time, so many men and women of this nation are giving their lives. I merely serve because I'm an American. That's why I come here.
Congratulations, Betty Lou Ramsey of Barstow, California. Your prize of $5 worth of war stamps has been mailed to you. Also, you have won for your Barstow observation post a handsome clock. Because of their excellence, we wish to give honorable mention to the following three contributors to the contest.
Books with $1 worth of war savings stamps have been forwarded as honorable mention prizes to Maud E. Nelson, Route 2, Box 171, Canby, Oregon, Mrs. Bess L. Seifert, 1307 California Street, Mountain View, California, and Mrs. Harry Klimp, Mukilteo, Washington. The statements are judged on the basis of originality and sincerity. Decision of the judges is final. Duplicate prizes will be awarded in the case of tie.
Congratulations all. Those civilian volunteers of the Aircraft Warning Service who wish to contribute a 100-word entry to next week's Why Do I Come Here contest, please send your entry to Eyes Aloft, Hollywood, California. Merely state in approximately 100 words why you continue to faithfully serve the Aircraft Warning Service. Maybe you will be one of the next week's winners. Filter Center News, compiled, edited, and presented each week for the 4th Fighter Command by the noted newscaster Sam Hayes. Here's the 4th edition of Filter Center News, presenting Sam Hayes.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your Eyes Aloft reporter, Sam Hayes, bringing you personal news of Pacific Coast Filter Center volunteers from border to border. Portland, Oregon. Snow, sleet, and rainstorms last week might have paralyzed Portland public transportation, but dressed in ski pants, hip boots, slacks, and whatnot, Portland Volunteer Filter Center women arrived regularly and kept all shifts fully manned. One example, Miss Billy Thomas of shift 6 skied 5.5 miles to work. That's the stuff, Portland. Bellingham, Washington. Stork work. Congratulations to Mrs. Mildred Engdahl of the Bellingham Filter Center. She plotted that great, long-legged, single-motor transport, the Stork, right to her own doorstep and presented her husband with a fine baby boy, Craig Albert. San Diego, here's a record, we think. Elsie Brick, Team 1B, was absent January 27th due to illness. Her first absence since coming on duty, December 8, 1941. San Diego, Mrs. Carl Engel, a new volunteer, gives this reason for offering her help to the Aircraft Warning Service. Her husband has been in Australia for the past 9 months. Her father is now a prisoner of war at Taiwan. Port Angeles, Washington, wedding bell. Phyllis Stannard, shift 10, is proudly wearing a new diamond ring. The lucky fellow is Staff Sergeant Troy Hurry of Olympia, former member of the Port Angeles Filter Center. Nuptials in June. North San Francisco Filter Center. Team 8 devotes all its spare time to making scrapbooks of complete serial stories, short stories, cartoons, and crossword puzzles for boys in hospitals overseas. Good idea, Team 8. Seattle. Only one casualty in the ranks of Seattle Information Center volunteers resulted from the recent storms. Lillian Grieg, shift 10-0, fell on ice and sustained a brain concussion. Fresno, California. Mrs. Harold C. Lewis entertained the third afternoon team at tea in her home. The entire team enjoyed the afternoon and hoped someone else gets a similar idea. Redding, California. Dorothy McRae has now reached the 1,000-hour milepost. Redding. Men have been pouring in this past week to offer their services operating the Redding Filter Center's graveyard ship. Other filter centers, please copy. Roseburg, Oregon. Shift A has three sets of sisters. Supervisor Miss Yvonne Gadway is the sister of Mrs. Don White. Mrs. Thelma Wasson's sister is Miss Dorothy Crocker. And Miss Virginia and Faith Young sisters all serve on the same shift. Sacramento. Mrs. Frances Alstrom, shift 1, serves two shifts each week, attends radio school 5 days a week, and has just signed up for the chemical warfare course given by the Filter Center. Mrs. Alstrom also manages a home and three children. Here's a report from Port Angeles, Washington. We aren't sure whether we do believe it or not. Norma Feta of Shift 10 yesterday released this latest military secret from Italy. She claims that the new paratroop planes of Italian design carry 20 men and one paratrooper. The other 20 men are there to push the paratrooper out. And thus, we conclude tonight's Filter Center News with this week's nomination to the Honor Roll of Service. This week, we name Mrs. H. Pickrell of Priest Valley, California, who last October, in a single month, served 316 hours. Who among you can beat that record? This is your Eyes Aloft Filter Center News reporter, Sam Hayes, bidding you one and all a very good evening.
Here's an announcement for women only. If you can qualify, you too may be given the opportunity of sharing the vital work of operating the Army Air Force's filter centers, which are located in many key cities of the Pacific Coast. True, not everyone can be accepted for this secret work. If you want to volunteer as a filter center worker, call your local civilian defense headquarters. They will put you in direct contact with the proper military authorities who supervise the work. All those women who serve say it's the most fascinating work they've ever done. Telephone your local civilian defense headquarters if you would like to learn whether you can qualify. And now, good news for those who have wanted to own a copy of our theme song, Eyes Aloft. Here's Ken Carpenter to tell you all about it. Ken?
Well, several months ago, we asked you if you'd like to buy a published copy of our theme, Eyes Aloft, which Gordon Jenkins wrote. At the time, we expected it available for purchase long before this. However, paper shortage made it necessary for the New York song publishing firm of Shapiro Bernstein to delay. But now the song is printed. Its attractive cover is the dark blue of the night skies. Searchlights pierce the darkness and illuminate the printed words at the top, Eyes Aloft. There's also an interesting photograph of Gordon Jenkins on the cover. You'll readily recognize the song when you stop into your local music song shop or 10-cent store to buy a copy. Buy a copy? Oh, yes, indeed. It'll sell at approximately 35 cents. And do you remember where we told you the profits from this song are to go? Well, Gordon Jenkins has turned over all of his title rights and profits, all of them, to the Aircraft Warning Service. However, Gordon specified that the money, his profits from the sale of Eyes Aloft, is to be used to build a comfortable, modern, well-equipped observation post for some community whose observers need such a post building. Obviously, the more copies of Eyes Aloft purchased, the sooner a tower will be constructed for some worthy observation post.
Ken, may I interrupt?
Oh, yes, Gene.
You say a tower, Ken.
Well, I did say that, yes.
Well, if the song goes over, as we now have indications, I wouldn't be surprised if there'd be money enough to build several towers.
We certainly hope so. Say, Gene, did you see the copy of the blueprints of the tower we're going to build?
No, I didn't. Who drew them up?
Well, we got them from the Clackamas County, Oregon, Civilian Defense Office. It's a tower that they've built up there in Clackamas County. Very nice, warm, comfortable, offers a fine view from the lookout room itself.
Windows on all sides, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Large windows that'll open up in the summer when the heat comes and keep the rain, snow, and wind out at this time of the year.
How high is the tower that you have the plans for?
27 feet. 18 feet from the ground level up to the catwalk that runs completely around the observation room.
The whole thing's built out of pretty sturdy lumber, I'll bet.
Oh, yes. The main legs of the tower are of 8x8 timbers. The legs are sunk into huge blocks of concrete at the four corners to guarantee absolute anchorage. Oh, it's the kind of tower that any community would like to have for its observation post building.
Particularly some community that's put up with an old tent or a broken down shed or such.
Oh, yes. Too many people are putting up with fall, winter, and spring discomforts of cold and exposure. But if everybody gets behind the Eyes Aloft song and buys a copy for 35 cents, a number of worthy communities will find themselves the proud possessors of an Eyes Aloft tower post.
Well, I think we ought to hear the song right now, Ken.
Well, it's coming right up, Gain. Gordon and his orchestra and the notable King's Men have a very special version all cooked up for right now. Gordon, King's Men, orchestra, you ready?
Ready!
Okay, then play it and sing it, guys. Eyes Aloft!
Century Paul Revere must watch the sky.
Eyes aloft, night and day, will help protect the USA.
This is the way Eyes Aloft can be played for a dance. We mean swing style. Dig it, Jenkins.
Choose partner.
all pick our clavis and our gourds? We shall!
Eyes Aloft, your theme song, the official song of the Aircraft Warning Service, the way everybody likes to sing it.
Eyes Aloft, watching the sky, watching the planes find the lanes up above. Eyes Aloft, always on guard, lending a hand, protecting the land we love. One it by land and two it by sea was once a sentinel's cry. But a modern 20th century Paul Revere must watch the sky. Eyes aloft, night and day, we'll help protect the USA.
Well, that's it. Your own official theme song of the Aircraft Warning Service. You'll want a published copy for your home, for your club, grange, school, or service club. Buy Eyes Aloft and then hear some worthy community sing when it's presented with a Tower Observation Post. Go to your music dealer, song shop, or dime store now. It's on sale at all music counters for approximately 35 cents. Sing Eyes Aloft.
Now, tonight's new and true great American story. In many communities, the local observation post has grown to mean more than just the place from which reports are made to the Army about airplanes. Take the case of Bellingham 25. This post is located in the center of a group of five Washington communities: Lawrence, Deeming, Van Zandt, Goshen, and Hopewell. At first, the post was housed in one of the cabins of a tourist court near George Lusk's general store at a crossroad about a mile and a half from the town of Lawrence. But today it proudly operates from a new tower recently completed and occupied. And how did this observation post become so important to the community? Well, listen to what happened on the very cold and foggy night of January 11th. Mrs. Mary Wakefield and Mrs. Ruby Clark had just come on their regular midnight to 3 a.m. shift.
I'll open the window, Mary.
Yes, do. I'll put some more wood in the heater.
I wore a heavy sweater under my coat tonight. It's below freezing right now, you know. There. The window's open.
Whew. Cold, all right. I guess a lot of observers would think we're plain batty if they saw the way we operate our watch.
You mean open the window and then heat wood in the stove?
Well, I don't care, Ruby. We come here to watch for airplanes.
Watch for airplanes on a pea soup night like this.
That's it. We have to listen for them. Remember what that Army officer said when he came and held the meeting?
Well, what do you mean?
About the Japs, if they ever come over.
Oh, sure. He said they'd probably fly over at 30,000 feet or higher. Mm-hmm.
Well, you certainly have to be listening sharply to hear a plane at that altitude.
Oh, maybe we're talking too much now, tonight.
We are.
I'll hush up. We're only here 3 hours once a week. I guess we can keep quiet and listen that long.
Yes, some observers make a regular clubhouse out of this place, and I personally think that... Wait.
Is there a plane?
I'll step outside on the catwalk.
Just leave the door open, Mary.
Well,
we got fooled. A car.
Yes, auto going up the highway. Just crossed the bridge.
Oh,
it's terribly foggy, Ruby. I'm going to stay out here and walk around the catwalk.
Well, you stay for 10 minutes, and then we'll trade off.
Well...
I'll come out, and you can come in and sit at the window in the stove.
We just mustn't miss any plane.
Oh, I know. It's all so very important, isn't it? I wish more people felt as we do, Mary.
It was the kind of a night when some observers would have huddled closer to the stove and attempted to convince themselves that no planes, enemy or friendly, could possibly be in the air. But not Mrs. Wakefield, Mrs. Clark. About 2:15 that bleak morning, the two ladies heard an odd sound.
What on earth is
it? It's coming from the tourist camp down there, I think.
What?
With the Ruby?
Isn't that a sort of a glow showing up through the fog?
Oh, it is. I see it now. It's a fire.
Why, it is.
Oh.
The cabin camp has caught on fire.
Oh, that camp's filled with people, you know.
Come on, down the stairs. Those people are probably all asleep.
Oh but maybe I'd better go back up and telephone to Everson to send their firefighting equipment.
Everson's 7 miles away. They'd get here too late. Look.
Oh, heavens. I put the entire front porch of that cabin to blaze.
I'll go wake Herb Pierce. He has one of those fire extinguishers.
Yes, well, go on, Mary. Go on, hurry. I'll go over and rouse George Luck. We'll still be able to hear any planes that pass over. Oh, but after all, that whole camp's asleep.
We've got to get the people out of this one camp or they'll get burned to death. You get George Lusk. I'll get Herb Pierce.
In but a matter of moments, the two women of the observation post had awakened half the camp. The flames of the burning porch of the one cabin rapidly spread to the roof. Heat and sparks threatened the other close-by cabins. The glow of fire threw an ominous light upon those who feverishly worked with hand fire extinguishers, with buckets.
Is there anybody in that cabin?
Yes, Mrs. Thelma Greenow and her 12-year-old boy. Come on, boys, pass those buckets of water.
Can't they get out the back door?
No back door. They got to be taken out the front. What are you going to do with that fire extinguisher now, Herb?
I'm going to get up closer. Smother the fire around the door.
Well, somebody get a rake or something. Pull that burning piece of lumber that just fell off the porch.
I'll get it. Hey, turn that extinguisher over this way a while, Herb.
I'm busy putting out the fire around
the
door.
All right, it's out now. I'll yell to Mrs. Greenow to be ready. I'll run in and open the door.
Be careful, George.
It's all right now. Oh, Mrs. Greenow. Mrs. Greenow. Don't worry. We'll get you out all right. Gotta get that door open. Oh, the door's stuck.
Oh, thank God. Thank God.
Come on, Mrs. Greenow. Take my arm. We'll run across the porch.
Yes. Come on, son. All right, Mother. Keep hold of Mother's hand. Oh, we were trapped in there.
Yes, I know. We'll talk later.
The blanket of fire at our door. Oh, you saved my life and my son.
I said, come on. Come on. Now, watch out you don't slip. The porch is wet now. Come on, Mrs. Greenow. Come on, son.
Hey, here they come.
Occupants of the burning cabin, a mother and her young son, were saved. The fire was controlled, finally put out before the other cabins caught. Dire disaster might have been the result had not Mrs. Mary Wakefield and Mrs. Ruby Clark, two airplane watchers, been alert. The fire happened on the night of January 11th. On the evening of January 14th, nearly 125 people of the communities attended a meeting in the Lawrence Grade School. A meeting to dedicate the new observation post tower, which had just been occupied. Lieutenant E.M. Ford, ground observer officer of the Bellingham Filter area, commended the community.
This is, has always been, one of the best posts in this area. Bellingham 25 has always had a splendid record of efficiency in making plane reports. Tonight, as we dedicate the handsome new tower you've built, you must think of it as an emblem of the fine cooperation and teamwork you of this district have shown. The Army congratulates you.
The dedicatory services continued. Chief Observer Laura Williams thanked all who had assisted with the construction of the tower, those who had donated materials and labor. She thanked observers new and old for helping establish the post's good record. Lieutenant W.S. Merrill told of his experiences at Pearl Harbor, and then awarded 100-hour armbands to 79 observers and 6 assistant chief observers. The coveted 500-hour pin was awarded to 4 observers. Assistant chief observer W.D. Wills gave a history of the post, and then Lieutenant Merrill asked Mrs. Mary Wakefield and Mrs. Ruby Clark to come forward. As the two bewildered ladies stood there before the audience, Lieutenant Merrill said,
"On Tuesday morning of this week, the Army received from your chief observer a written report of an incident which occurred at your post on Monday morning, January 11th, about 2:15 a.m. You, Mrs. Wakefield, and you, Mrs. Clark, observers on duty at that time, discovered a fire on the porch of a nearby cabin. The two occupants were sleeping soundly, despite the noise of crackling fire and falling wood. Had the fire gone much longer undetected, it would have trapped them and would have quickly spread to the adjoining cabins, one of which was occupied by an elderly invalid. Friends, these two observers were on the alert. They awakened neighbors who extinguished the fire before it had reached any serious proportions. Mrs. Clark, Mrs. Wakefield, for Lieutenant Ford, myself, and other officers of the Aircraft Warning Service of the Bellingham Filter Area, I wish to commend you for your exceptional devotion to duty.
Well, I haven't the slightest idea what...
Just a minute, please. There's something else. Here, these. One for each of them.
What in heaven's name?
Your community wishes to prove to you its appreciation. From the well-financed post funds, they purchased a $25 war bond for each of you. And with them go the thanks of the people with whom you live.
I don't know what to say.
A minute. Lieutenant Merrill.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Williams. Has the chief observer something to say about all this?
Well, I've been talking plenty tonight. But I think Bobby Lusk here would like to say something. Step up there, Bob.
On behalf of my father and the other folks on this corner, we would like to duplicate the award given by the Post. If you hadn't seen that fire and did what you did, Dad and other folks say there probably wouldn't be a corner store or cabins or anything left standing today. Here, another war bond for each of you. And thanks.
Oh, well, I'm so overwhelmed. I just can't say anything but thanks.
Yes, thanks to everyone. Oh, believe me, it's good to be appreciated by your home folks. Thanks, everyone.
Those are the kind of people who live in the rural Washington communities of Lawrence, Deeming, Van Sant, Goshen, and Hopewell. Those are the folks who so successfully and efficiently operate observation posts Bellingham 25. Perhaps now you understand what we meant when we said in some communities, the observation post means more than a place from which airplanes are reported. In many communities, the observation post has grown to be a symbol of the spirit of the community. We salute the people of Bellingham 25.
Each week, the National Broadcasting Company presents the handsome Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award to some outstanding post or filter center. Here is Major Russell Z. Smith to make this week's presentation. Major Smith.
The Aircraft Warning Service is a new part of the United States Army Air Forces. Our Volunteer Ground Observer Corps has been given standards by which to serve. However, it is making its own traditions. The story of Ruby Clark and Mary Wakefield on the alert during the foggy midnight shift of January 11, 1943, has added a glorious and new chapter of the post history of Bellingham 25 and to the records of the 4th Fighter Command. To that post, we proudly present this week's Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award.
Gain Whitman saying goodnight to the 150,000 valiant Aircraft Warning Service volunteer civilians who keep constant vigil of our home front so that America will be ever safe from enemy attack by air. Good night.
Don't forget to send in your 100-word entry to the Why Do I Come Here contest. Send your entries to Eyes Aloft, Hollywood, California. And don't forget to check your music shops or dime stores for our theme song. If your dealer doesn't have it yet, ask him to order it. Eyes Aloft is written and produced by Robert L. Redd. The music is composed and conducted by Gordon Jenkins. This is Ken Carpenter charging you to always remember... Eyes Aloft!
Eyes Aloft! Watching the sky! Watching for planes flying the lanes up above! Eyes Aloft!
This program comes to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.